Think back to the last heated debate you had, maybe about politics, vaccines, or even which superhero franchise is superior. You probably walked away frustrated, convinced the other person was either stubborn or stupid. Here's the uncomfortable truth. They likely felt exactly the same about you. We've all been taught that rational people change their minds when presented with better evidence. Yet in our increasingly polarized world, facts seem to bounce off people like rubber bullets. This isn't because we're broken. It's because we've fundamentally misunderstood how minds actually work. Consider Charlie Veitch, a charismatic British conspiracy theorist who built his identity around believing 9/11 was an inside job. When a BBC film crew took him to meet structural engineers and grieving families, something unexpected happened. The evidence shattered his certainty. He publicly renounced his conspiracy beliefs, and his entire community turned on him viciously, calling him a government plant and threatening his family. The same evidence that changed Charlie's mind didn't budge anyone else. Why? Because changing your mind isn't really about evidence at all. Your experience of reality feels direct and unfiltered, but it's actually a sophisticated hallucination your brain constructs moment by moment. This became spectacularly obvious in 2015 when The Dress broke the internet. Some people saw it as blue and black, others as white and gold, and neither group could comprehend how anyone could see it differently. Neuroscientist Pascal Wallach's study of the dress phenomenon revealed that your brain doesn't passively record reality. It makes educated guesses based on past experiences. Whether you saw the dress as blue or white depended on your lighting assumptions, shaped by whether you spent more time outdoors or indoors. Wallach later photographed pink Crocs with white socks under green lighting. Younger people typically saw gray Crocs with green socks. Older people saw pink Crocs with white socks. Younger viewers saw the actual photo colors, while older viewers' brains unconsciously corrected for the lighting based on life experience. This reveals naive realism, the conviction that we see the world as it truly is, free from bias. When someone disagrees, we assume the lighting is off on their end rather than considering they have different information or processing methods. Understanding that we each inhabit slightly different perceptual realities is the first step toward genuine dialogue. When your brain encounters contradictory information, dopamine drops sharply, creating visceral discomfort. Your brain treats this like a physical threat, activating the same danger response regions. Psychologists demonstrated this with switched color playing cards, red spades and black hearts. Subjects first ignored the anomalies, then grew uncomfortable until finally experiencing a shock of recognition. This mirrors all belief change. We ignore contradictions, feel increasingly uncomfortable, then update our worldview only when contradictions become overwhelming. Political scientist David Redlosk found a quantifiable threshold for this shift. When people received 10 to 20% negative information about their preferred candidate, they doubled down. But crossing roughly 30% triggered abandonment. Below this effective tipping point, contradictory evidence paradoxically strengthens beliefs. Beyond it, anxiety about being wrong finally triggers change. This explains why arguing rarely works. You're pushing people to defend more vigorously. Each contradiction feels like an attack, strengthening the walls around existing beliefs rather than dismantling them. Here's a puzzle. If our brains are so biased, why do we reason at all? Cognitive scientists Hugo Mercier and Dan Sperber discovered reasoning didn't evolve to find truth. It evolved to win arguments and convince others. Our ancestors survived through collective decision-making, creating a division of cognitive labor. We present biased ideas, and the group tears them apart, collectively reaching better conclusions than any individual could alone. This explains why you're terrible at spotting flaws in your own reasoning, but excellent at finding holes in others' arguments. It's not a bug, it's a feature. When researchers tricked people into evaluating their own arguments as if they came from someone else, 69% rejected reasoning they'd previously accepted. We're designed to be lazy individually, but brilliant collectively. The problem? Modern life isolates us in echo chambers. On social media, we argue with ourselves, surrounded by people who already agree. Without genuine back and forth with different thinkers, we fall prey to what legal scholar Cass Sunstein calls group polarization. Groups formed around shared attitudes become more extreme over time. Megan Phelps Roper grew up in Westboro Baptist Church, picketing military funerals with hateful signs. By her 20s, she ran their social media, spreading their message to millions. Then Jewish activist David Abitbol challenged her on Twitter, not with anger, but genuine curiosity. He pointed out contradictions. If Westboro advocated the death penalty for gay people, weren't they casting stones? If her mother had committed adultery before repenting, shouldn't she have been executed before getting that chance? These questions haunted Megan. But here's what's crucial. She didn't leave Westboro because her beliefs changed. Her beliefs changed because she left Westboro. While surrounded by family reinforcing these ideas daily, contradictory evidence simply bounced off. Only after losing that community could she reconsider evidence that had been available all along. Her brother Zach left after the church refused him medical treatment. Weeks later, a gay waiter who recognized him paid for his meal. That kindness from someone he'd been taught to view as subhuman shattered his worldview, but only because he was no longer embedded in a community that would explain it away. This reveals the deepest truth. We don't form opinions through careful individual analysis. We inherit them from our tribes. Questioning beliefs that define your group doesn't just risk being wrong, it risks social death, which our brains treat as more terrifying than physical death. After California's Proposition 8 banned same-sex marriage in 2008, Dave Fleischer's team discovered facts were useless at changing minds. What worked was deep canvassing, asking questions that evoked personal experiences. They'd show a video, then ask, "Have you ever faced a difficult decision where you felt judged?" 15 minutes of mostly listening helped people connect abstract issues to concrete life moments. Political scientists David Brookman and Joshua Kalla found unprecedented results. A single 20-minute conversation produced attitude changes persisting for months, shifts larger than 14 years of natural opinion evolution. 1 in 10 people moved significantly. Deep canvassing helps people discover contradictions between stated beliefs and lived experiences. When 72-year-old Martha, initially opposed to abortion, remembered helping a friend who nearly died from an illegal abortion, she wasn't told she was wrong. She accessed her own wisdom. The core insight? People don't change minds because you present better arguments. They change when they feel safe enough to question their own thinking. In 2012, President Obama became the first sitting president to support same-sex marriage. Within a single generation, American support surged from 27% to 70%, while Republican opposition dropped from 81% to 56%. What seemed impossible became inevitable with shocking speed. Social change doesn't happen through steady progress. It happens through cascades. Like a forest fire, it requires both dry conditions and a spark. When vulnerability meets catalyst, change spreads exponentially. Sociologist Mark Granovetter explains this through thresholds of resistance. Imagine students waiting outside a classroom. The first won't check if it's open because they were once embarrassed. The second avoids awkward interaction. The third assumes the first two know something. But if just one person opens the door, the entire cascade collapses instantly. Throughout history, most attempts at change get absorbed by the system, but occasionally conditions align and a previously ineffective shock triggers transformation. The people who change the world aren't necessarily geniuses with perfect arguments. They're the ones who never stop striking at the status quo. Dave Fleischer knocked on 13,000 doors. Most conversations went nowhere, but some hit at exactly the right moment, creating ripples that spread through communities. The question isn't whether minds can change, they demonstrably do. It's whether you're willing to keep knocking, keep listening, keep creating the conditions where change becomes possible.